Welcome to another episode of Secrets in the City, where we turn secrets of our past into lifelong lessons. My name is Dr. Catherine Nisko, and as always, I'm very proud to be your host of this podcast series. Today, we're going to change things up, and here's the reason why. Chris Hemsworth was, well, at least in my head, going to be the next guest on this podcast, and for some reason, it didn't happen. I know, strange. So I thought we'd spice things up a bit and really go back to the foundation of what this podcast is all about, secrets. Now, joining me today is my most beautiful team member, Gabby. Welcome, Gabby.
Hello. It's nice to be on the other side.
At the other side. Ooh, that sounds very existential. Now, listen, if you're just tuning into this podcast or you don't know what the secrets is all about, let me give you the 411 on it. For the past 10 years, I've done an exercise within my workshops and my talks. I get people to write down a secret or just something that they feel guilty about on a little piece of paper. Now, they don't write their name or identifying details. It's just kind of to let that secret out, to tell the truth, but in a very, very safe way. The analogy that I always use, which my partner Vlado hates when I use this analogy, but it's kind of like letting out a really uncomfortable fart. And I think we've all been there, especially like on a first date. You're like, yes, I eat everything. I'm going to have the Alfredo, the creamy pasta and this and that. And you're just holding on for dear friggin' life until you get home. You get in the front door and you just let that big one rip. And it feels so good, right? I know you're laughing right now because maybe that's just happened to you. But at one point of your life, it would have happened to you. Can I get a hell yeah? Back to the secret exercise. I've collected thousands over the years, and some of them are lighthearted and funny, like I blame my husband when I eat a family bag of chips. And some of them are quite deep and quite, I guess, from left field. If you're not expecting them, they kind of hit you where it hurts. And I actually keep these meaningful secrets, a couple of them by my computer, to remind me why I do what I do. So without further ado, I really want to dive into just a handful of secrets today. And before we go into it, just a note that some of them might be a bit triggering, so please use appropriate methods to keep yourself mentally and also physically safe. So let's go to the first one.
So the first question that we've chosen is, I don't have any friends.
I can relate to this so deeply, and whenever this comes up, I immediately go to a memory. I was about 23, I think 22, 23, and I was just starting my academic career, I guess you would call it, my bachelor's. I'd moved into a basement of this townhouse, and there was a bunch of cool people upstairs. We ended up being friends, and I remember when we were just starting the relationship, there was the landlady, who became eventually my good friend, we were just starting out the relationship, and I was so desperate to have a friend. And we said, you know, we were going to walk the dogs on a particular date, and that date rolled around. And then she said, oh, sorry, I made other plans. Can we catch up another time? And I remember taking my two dogs, Jelly and Bean, to the park anyways. And I was walking through the woods, and I found this log, and I sat on this log. And I don't ever remember crying so hard in my entire life, because in my head, no one liked me. Even though it was just because she sort of forgot and she made other plans. But in that moment, I thought, no one is going to like me. I will never have friends. And it kind of reminds me, you know, I don't think that feeling ever goes away, that you want people to like you. I mean, heck, you're only human. I mean, even animals. I mean, Eddie is sleeping on my lap right now. He wants to feel love. I don't think that there's anything wrong with it. But the one thing I would ask people to consider is, you know, is it that you quantitatively don't have friends, or is it by comparison you don't have friends? Because I think a lot of us, especially me, I look to this Sex and the City kind of televised examples of friendships. And you think, because I don't have that, because I'm not, you know, going out for martinis and going to these fashion shows and having these regular deep conversations with someone. Therefore, I don't have good friendships, but I don't think that's really true. And as I get older, I absolutely relate to that. I might have not have a lot of friends, but the friends that I have are friggin' gold and I can call them up at any time. But the other thing I would suggest is how much effort and I guess how much love are you putting into your relationships? Because these kind of friendships, if you don't nurture them, they're going to go their separate ways and you can't blame them. So I think with relationships, whether that's, you know, a loving relationship or not, effort is key to having friends.
Yeah, I love that. Quality over quantity, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's.
I think you're full quality.
Thank you. Heart. Right back at ya.
Thank you.
Okay, so the next question, the next secret is, I sometimes doubt my love for my husband and it kills me. So neither of us are married. We don't have husbands, but we were talking before about, I guess, this secret can relate to a platonic relationship, a relationship with your family, your friends, your partner. You don't necessarily have to be married to relate to it. So do you relate to this secret, Kat?
I absolutely relate to this. And I'll tell you a brief story. I remember I got this scholarship to this incredible university and I ended up giving it up for this guy I was dating. This is, you know, 20 years ago. And after, I think a month later, I ended up dumping him just because I was just like, oh, you're not for me. You're boring me. I know that sounds horrible. And I regret that because, I should have taken up that damn scholarship. But anyways, point being is that I often joke with my current partner, who I love and adore, we've been together, I think, about a decade or so now, that some of love, or I think much of love, is biochemical. And, you know, there's a lot of studies that show that you have this dopamine rush where you're just wanting and urging and yearning for the person, especially in the formative, I guess, period of the relationship. And then you wonder, oh, you know, because this feeling is fading, maybe I don't love him anymore. And I'm like, that is not you. That is dopamine. Like, that's all that is, honey, or honey boo, whoever you are. Getting back to the secret, this doubt of love, I think one thing I would consider is who you comparing that feeling of love to. Are you expecting that after 100 billion years of being in the same relationship with someone, are you expecting like the same kind of zazazoo as you once experienced? You know, my partner and I have a lot of conversations about this, and I think sometimes we just get too comfortable with each other. I mean, Lord knows how much I fart in front of him, and he has his own quirks and quirks, and we just sort of like, I don't know, we laugh at it. And sometimes it's like, you know, should we be making more of an effort? And the answer is always yes. But we both have very, very busy work lives. And we had a conversation about this about 3 weeks ago or so. And we just had basically a check-in conversation. And we were on the couch. We do this thing where we kind of are just paralyzed by the end of the day, but we sit on the couch and we touch feet. Like we have both have bare feet and we touch our toes, and that's our way of showing our love. But we had this conversation essentially saying we're both so friggin' tired. It's not because we don't love each other. We're just friggin' tired. So let's just touch toes. that's the extent. So if you're out there and you can relate to being really tired and just brain dead by the end of the day, and you're feeling like, oh, I should be doing more, and I'm doubting my love for my partner, two pieces of advice there. One, biochemical. You can't get around it. Dopamine is going to decrease over time. Two, that's just becoming an adult. There's other shit on your plate. And, you know, go the touching toe route.
I think people show love in different ways. And it's so important to understand how you receive love or give love, mm-hmm. and vice versa with your partner. I'm definitely the touching toes or just having a hand on my partner, because to me it's that physical touch, like just, oh, I'm touching you, you're there. And for me, I'm just like, oh, that's so much love. So
yeah,
it's such a little thing. Absolutely. It makes a lot of difference.
And I don't know if I answered that even to its fullest, because, you know, I'm reading into The Secret now, like I'm doubting my love for my husband or partner and it's killing me. And the question is it because of, you know, just time sort of softens the edges of a relationship, or is it because you're doubting your love because you've changed? And I think people, personally, my partner and I speak about this quite a bit. We both want to change. We do not want to be the same people that we were yesterday. That would drive us both absolutely insane. We want to push each other and grow. So that's one thing. But maybe it's kind of like diverging lines. You know, are you crossing each other or diverging out? And maybe that's why. Maybe your value system has changed. So I think there's objective ways of looking at relationship change. There's also just the typical history change, which is based on, I think, dopamine.
I have the privilege of getting to sit next to you 5 days a week, at least. And I just love being able to hear your I guess, take on life from a scientific point of view, and being able to look at something as big of a topic as love and relate it back to science. It's humbling, I guess, in a sense, because it's just like, hey, we're just literally pieces of flesh.
We are just a whole bunch of cells. I remember having this deep conversation with my dad because we're very open about death. And I've asked him several times, you know, just, you know, what do you want me to do when you start? I mean, my dad's a bit weird in the first place. So when he actually does go senile, I don't think there's going to be much of a difference. But he's essentially said, when I am not able to contribute to society, that's when I want to pull the plug. And I said, you know, what do you think about death? And he's like, well, it's just apoptosis of cells. It's just cellular death. And I said, well, you know, what about the light? People talk about this light. And he's like, well, that's just energy being released. So you have to understand that from the time I was 6 years old, everything explained to me by my father related back to science. This is why. So I think I definitely have 50% of his genes. But I think I have about 100% of his personality. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the next question. That got into death. That was heavy.
It was. It was. But see, death doesn't bother me.
Yeah, and I love that. I love that you can be objective about these things when it's necessary, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can understand when people are afraid of death. I get it. But I don't know. I'm that person that when I go out for an operation and they give me the anesthetic, I actually try my hardest to stay awake because I really want to feel how it feels. Never freaking works.
Pretty weird, Kat.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, next secret. I cheated on my amazing boyfriend with my ex and it's killing me. Ooh. Thoughts?
I can relate. I've cheated before. And it's not like I've never said this before. And this is, again, I don't want to, you know, spotlight on my partner. But this is one of the reasons why I believe we have a really good relationship is because, well, he's going to tell you a different story. But he chased me for a year. And I was like, I don't need a man, because I was in my I hate all men, I don't want a man, that kind of stage. So because of that, we were really good friends. And I just put everything out on the table. And I've cheated before. And at the time, like looking back now, when I look at the reasons why, is because I was starving for attention. And I just loved having someone else want me and say that I'm amazing and that they were going to put their own relationship on the line for me. And that was a really precarious way to live, because even when I got into a normal relationship, that feeling wasn't there. Like it wasn't as, I guess, risque or risky. So then I thought to myself, well, then this isn't as good of a relationship because there's none of that sort of
dopamine rush.
Dopamine, yeah. I was going to say that again, but I was like, do I bring up dopamine again? But that's why relationships are something like monkeys swinging through the trees. you know, you're in one relationship, you're swinging on the branch, it feels fantastic. But after the swing goes for a while, you're like, oh, I want to get that next rush. So I'm going to jump to the next relationship. So cheating, God, I think that is a freaking minefield of a conversation, because the question is, you know, who's to blame? Is it both parties? Is it just one party? Ugh, so complicated. But I guess one thing that I would ask the person to consider is forgiving yourself, because you know what? Shit happens. Sometimes we make really crappy decisions when we're in crappy situations. And you can do one of two things. You can either live in the past and regret that for the rest of your life, which is the equivalent of having an anchor on your foot, or you can make a decision to move forward. And if you look at the etymology of the word decision, it means to cut off. So my question to you is, can you cut off that storyline, and can you use that to better your next relationship? And that's what both my partner and I have done. We know what's at stake here. Our relationship is far from perfect. There are days that he wants to kill me and I want to kill him. But we know that it's that discomfort that we have to get through. The 7-year itch, the, you know, communication faults and all that. If you can just push through that, then I think good things happen.
I'm reading into The Secret a little bit more, and it sounds like when they wrote this, at least, that they were still in their relationship and almost hadn't told their amazing boyfriend about cheating. So what would you say to someone who's holding on to that guilt? Do you think it would work out? Because just before you said, you know, when you're in your next relationship. So do you think that for this person there will be a next relationship, or can they work through it?
So the question is, do you tell the truth or not to the person? I always say yes.
I agree.
Because again, I just think I very rarely can think of a situation where one should not tell the truth. And, you know, there's this great quote by Shakespeare, "To thine own self be true, and if follows a night by day, thou shalt never be false to any man." I think it was Hamlet. And the way I read that quote is, be true to yourself and you'll always have good, authentic relationships. You'll be a good person. And again, that's something, that's a quote that my dad told me many, many years ago, and it's on repeat in my mind. And I just think that a life with dishonesty is not really a true life.
Absolutely. Okay, so next secret. I hate the people I've hurt and cannot say sorry to or apologize and take it back.
I struggle with the word can't, because you can, you choose not to. And of course, we don't know the details of what this person has gone through. And I'm not trying to minimize the situation by any means, but I think that can't and choose not to is something very important for people to consider. For example, you know, if we just talk about like an innocuous situation, like I can't go to the gym because I don't have time. Well, no, that's not true. And really, really watching the silent conversations that you have in your head. So my suggestion is, first, why not change the secret and say, I choose not to apologize, and see what kind of thoughts come up for you. Does that change the narrative? Does that change your ability or your thoughts to actually step forward into that apology? If it does, why do you think it has? And, you know, consider the difference between not apologizing and actually apologizing. Apologizing might be highly, highly uncomfortable for maybe a day, 2 days, 3 days until you lead up to it. But can you compare that with the discomfort that you're feeling right now? You're already feeling uncomfortable. So why not just push through that discomfort? I always ask myself, what's the worst thing that could happen? All right, so let's look at the situation. You apologize to these people that you've hurt, if I'm understanding this correctly, and they come back at you and say, you this, you that, and the Italian swear words go, and this and that. Like, the worst thing is that you're dead to me, right? Like, absolutely horrible. That is horrible. That is a horrible, horrible, horrible feeling. Just like when you actually say to someone, I've cheated on you. Horrible discomfort. But that discomfort, isn't that worth it rather than having a life full of that discomfort? And is the thing that really, that bad thing that's going to happen as bad as you think it's going to be? Telling the truth is horrible. That's why a lot of people don't do it.
Yeah, but this is also the worst case scenario. You know, how likely is that scenario going to happen? And hey, if it does, you've thought about it and you've put some steps in place to navigate it when it does happen, hopefully not. But then, you know, that worst case scenario, say they do blow up and it's, you know, you never see them again. They're potentially not seeing them anyway. You know, maybe their relationship is so tainted by what they've done. Worst case scenario isn't that different.
Sometimes the saddest things in life are the best lessons. They just really, really suck.
Push through the discomfort. Okay, next one. I'm scared my boyfriend doesn't love me or my body the size and weight it is, despite him telling me he does daily. Can you relate to this one?
I absolutely can, because there's been many a times where, and I'm just talking when I'm even younger, it's like, lights are off, don't even think about it. But I don't want to be sexist in what I'm about to say, but men really, really, like, love women. I'm trying to be really...
I was like, where are you going with this?
I'm trying to be cautious with my words here, but I guess what I'm saying is, if your boyfriend is saying, like, I think you're sexy and I love you.
He probably does.
Yeah. The question here is, do you love yourself? And that's a harder question to answer, because regardless of how much someone says you're amazing, you're so smart, I think you're incredible, you're going to hear what you say to yourself way more, if not only, compared to what someone else is going to say to you. So that's my question. And this is for everyone listening. I think, you know, whether you're in a relationship, again, maybe it's a coworker that you're working with and you're constantly saying, like, hey, wow, well done. And they respond, and this is something that you can actually look out for, if they say, yes, but... So they say, yes, but I had someone else helping me, or yes, but I was just lucky. That's when you know that a person is really rolling the dice with their self-worth, that there's always this kind of conditional acceptance of compliments. And what I would invite you as a friend to actually sit down with them and say, listen, every time I give you a compliment, I'm hearing this yes, but. I would really love to know where that's coming from. And, you know, can you tell me a bit more about it? Because I really want you to understand how much you mean to me and how incredible you are. But it feels like you're not really hearing it.
I used to be really bad at accepting compliments, and I feel like you would know that. And I've been taking ownership a lot more. Well, I think I am.
You are.
Yeah. And just going, hang on, no, I did do this, you know, with a piece of work, perhaps, you know, I did do it and it is good.
There's a big difference between being egotistical and conceited, like, oh yeah, of course I'm amazing, versus just being grateful and gracious and humble with your acceptance of a compliment. And I'm like you, a long time ago, people used to say, oh, you're so pretty, you're so smart. And I'm like, no. Now I'm like, hell yeah, I'll accept that. Thank you very much. And I don't obviously say it that way. Or I do, I must admit that sometimes I do crack a joke. I say, oh, do go on. So I do deflect it still, but I think, you know, just baby steps to accepting compliments.
Okay, so the next secret, which is sort of the last one on this theme of love and relationships and family, is I feel guilty about fighting with my husband in front of my children.
I can relate to this one, but not as strongly as the others. The reason why I thought to put this in is because I think it's something that's so prevalent. Just hear me out here. I don't actually think it's that bad, or as bad as what we make of it in our head, to have a disagreement in front of our children. The reason is because if they go into their relationship expecting to never, ever, ever have a, you know, not agree with something someone else says, that's going to set them up for massive failure in the future. So when my partner and I do have disagreements in front of the children, I think we have this unspoken rule between us that, one, the tone of voice remains relatively calm and relatively more on the conversational side. And then, two, if and when it does get heated, we agree to take a break. The last time this happened was probably about 2-3 months ago, and I could feel myself just wanting to rip his liver out. And when you start feeling that way, I take the dogs for a walk. And I think, again, that shows that you're human in front of your children, and you recognize that, okay, mom and dad, or mom and mom, or dad and dad have arguments. Here's how they approach it. They're not trying to hide it from us, because remember, children are quite smart, that even though you think you're hiding an argument from them, they know their shit. They know the 411 on everything. So if you choose to have a disagreement in front of them, have a conversation with your partner while the iron is cold. So meaning that don't have this conversation with them while the iron is hot. Talk to your partner and say, when we next have our argument, because we know we will, why don't we put some boundaries in place so we don't have to hide it from the children, and we can actually be role models for them to show that it's okay when people disagree. Here's how we're going to do it. And if it gets too heated, here are the steps that we're going to take. We're going to separate ourselves so our stress levels can come back down, and we can come back and actually create a solution when we come back together.
And that's probably a good piece of advice for anyone going through an argument, whether they have kids or not. It's just like, hey, this is getting heated. It's not productive. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you know, is this heated conversation or argument going to contribute to our relationship in a year's time? Like, mm-hmm. is this actually productive? Is this useful? And yeah. I think everyone can benefit from taking a quick walk or...
Absolutely. I notice when I get into point scoring mode, which is when my partner Vlado says something and I immediately try to think of a way to one-up him. It's kind of like we both turn into lawyers. He's definitely a much better lawyer than I am. So there's that to consider. Are you saying something to point score, or are you trying to say something to make a point? Big difference between the two. The other thing that I would ask people to consider is pausing before you actually say your next comment. That's tip number two, because there's a big difference between having something spill off your tongue and having something meaningful come off your tongue. Number three, can you mirror what they said? Hear me out here. If someone says, well, you did this and you did that, can you first, before answering them, mirror what they said? So what you're saying is, or what I'm hearing you say is this, do I have this correct? Now, this does two things. It ensures that the communication is clear. Number two, it slows down the conversation so that you're arguing facts, you're not arguing opinions. And that's one of my most favorite quotes that I heard from Dr. Sandy Chong. She said she was at Harvard, a professor was listening to the student speak, and he stopped her and said, listen, you can argue your opinion, but you can't argue fact. And I think that's something to consider as well. It's okay to have opinions, but where the facts, you know, it's black and white.
Okay, so the next one is actually a theme around work. Mm-hmm. So this secret is, I promote health and wellness and find myself constantly going against what I share and teach.
I could have written that one about 8 years ago. So prior to what I'm doing now, I had a company called Deliciously Fit, and that was at the zenith of my disordered eating and body image issues. Well, zenith is probably a bit of a stretch there, but it was definitely at the height. And I remember, you know, all these posts that I was doing, and a lot of the posts were, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at how amazing I am, buy my shit. And I think that's a big one. That's the reason why I relate to this so well. And I think this is well before all this truthfulness and openness and so forth came out on social media. And to be honest, The only thing I can say is you can only keep up that secondary face, that pretend face, for so long. Eventually, you're going to hit a wall of fatigue, and you're going to say to yourself, you know what? What's the worst thing that could happen if I'm actually just honest? And listen, some people do it for their whole life. You know, they push these products and so forth. And my question is, can you really sell something that you don't believe in, especially if you don't believe in yourself? And it's yourself that you're selling. So it's hard because there's so much money to be made in health and wellness. And let me tell you, it is so tempting to be lured in by that siren call of money. But it wasn't for me. I could have made so much money just going down that route, but I would have never slept again. So I guess the shout out that I'm saying right now is, you know, what's holding you back for just being yourself? You know, is it logical or is it just financial?
Yeah. And it kind of comes back to the relationship piece, right? You can't be in a relationship where you're expecting someone to love you if you can't fully give yourself.
Mm-hmm. 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 Hell yeah.
Okay. How about this secret? I feel like I'm always preparing for my best life, but never actually living it.
This is a big one. And I'm going to go against grain here. I know there's a lot of talk about purpose and meaning, and I get it. I've drunk the Kool-Aid. I think it's really important. But if you really think about it, we're all just freaking making shit up. Hear me out here. If you're listening to this podcast, likely you'll have a roof over your head. Likely you won't be scavenging for food. So, you know, you'll have a relatively full tummy. So you're relatively safe. So after those basic Maslow's needs are met, after that, you need to decide, okay, what am I going to do with my time? And that's where we just make shit up. Like, oh, you want to be a creative? Cool. There's a school for that. Oh, you want to be a doctor? Awesome. Write this really hard exam. And if you're smart enough, you get in. Cool. That's it. Now, getting back to this, I'm waiting for my life to start. Sometimes we start our life and then we're like, is this really what I signed up for? It's okay to pivot. I pivoted more than a friggin' figure skater. I went from restaurateur, caterer, pastry chef, to real estate, to an academic, to health and wellness, to a personal trainer. The list is endless. Honey, keep on inventing yourself if you want to. But the one thing I'll say is sometimes you don't need to actually get the Holy Grail. Focus on what's happening during your journey to get that Holy Grail, because the Holy Grail is just a friggin' cup. That's all it is. Like, I think what, you know, and again, pushing it back to science here, the wanting is always stronger than the liking, meaning that if you're sitting here and you're like, ooh, I really want a donut, in your head, you're conjuring this image of a donut, and literally it has godlike qualities. Like the sky parts, the light comes down on the donut. This is the kind of amazing features you put on this donut. When you have the donut, it's going to be good, but it ain't going to be as good as you want it. Putting this back into the analogy of life, oftentimes what I think when we get so stuck on what's our purpose, what's our meaning, you know, is this as good as it gets? I think we're putting way too much pressure on ourselves that we conjure this idea that when we find our purpose and meaning, like God is going to talk to us and wake us up in the morning and help us spring out of bed, and that everything is going to be these farting unicorns and so forth. It's not that. We're just making shit up. So my question to you is, why don't you just make something else up?
I love it. I love a bit of tough love. But also, I think, and it's part of the secret, is we spend so much time thinking about the future, which is important. Mm-hmm. It is important. And yes, we may be making it up. We're making up our future. But we don't spend enough time in the present moment, because, you know, you can always be planning or thinking about your best life, what that's going to look like. But until you start actually making those steps today, This is never going to happen.
I would say the genius is in the doing, not the thinking. So perhaps something to consider is you might be thinking a lot about your future, but what are the things that you are actually physically doing to get you closer towards whatever that may look like? And you might say back to me, say, well, but I don't know what that thing is. And well, I think without all the rabbit holes that I went down, I don't think I would actually be happy with where I'm at today. So I think we put a lot of time pressure on ourselves that tomorrow has to come tomorrow. Whereas I think if you have a bit more flexibility when you will be happy, I think that's just a more gentle way of approaching things.
Definitely. Okay. Well, the next secret is, I wonder if people notice me when I walk down a street, but then I feel really conceited when I notice the thought.
So my immediate memory went back to, I was walking down the street. This is in Toronto on Bloor Street. So a very, very major street. And I was walking with a buddy of mine and I was just blabbing on as per usual. And he stopped me. He's like, do you realize that everyone is looking at you? And I didn't. I was a bit of a pocket rocket back then. And I'm sure I was wearing a very short skirt. The point being is that I didn't notice because I just actually didn't think that people were looking at me. And I noticed from that moment on, I was constantly checking whether or not people were noticing me. Now, we need to, I think, clarify when we're saying notice. I think what this person meant is noticing in a positive way. And another memory is I remember I was at a bar and I was walking down the stairs and I was with my girlfriend and we were walking down the stairs and at the bottom of the stairs, she just said, do you realize that every single person in the bar was looking at you? And I said, oh no, but I freaking knew. I totally was doing the hip sway and this and that. I was so desperate for someone, at least one person, to look at me because that's how I measured my worth. And maybe you guys can relate to this. You know, you walk into work and you have a new hairstyle. You have you're just putting a bit more effort into your appearance. And then if someone notices, great. But if someone doesn't notice, it's like exponentially hurtful. And it's a precarious way to live. It's kind of like putting all your self-worth eggs into one basket. But I get it. I get it because, man, that rush when someone notices you is so addicting. It's so addicting. But whether it's conceited or not, I don't know. I think that's murky because conceited is I deserve it versus maybe self-worth is I want it.
I think it's that reframing how you approach that situation.
Mm.
Having, not more of a positive spin, but more of a kind to yourself spin.
Yeah.
But it's okay to want to look a certain way or feel a certain way. I think it's only human.
Mm-hmm. I think it just depends on whether you're depending it.
Absolutely.
On it or not.
And that's that external validation thing again.
Yeah. I would like, I guess the litmus test would be, I hope that someone notices me, but I'll be okay if no one does.
What about when someone says, oh, you look really nice today?
I have a beef with this one because I know in the past few years, everyone was saying, oh, you shouldn't say that to someone anymore. Why not? It's okay. And I remember, I'll tell you this one story, and it literally made my day. I was working in my buddy's restaurant. I was working the door, what do you call it, like a guest, hostess. I was a hostess with Mostis. And he had very, very wealthy people coming in. And there was two gentlemen that just came in for drinks at the bar, so right near the hostess stand, having their own conversation. And before this one gentleman left, he turned to me and he said, I just wanted to let you know that you are a gorgeous woman. I'm married, but I needed to tell you that. And then he walked out, never saw him again. And I remember just because of the way that he said it in such a beautiful, honest way, it meant the world to me.
I think that is the key. It's the way you say it. I live with a chronic illness and I've had people say some pretty horrible things to me, just strangers on the street, just because they're assuming a certain thing about myself, or, you know, they'll come up to me and ask me, you know, what bit of technology is on my arm. It's just crazy what, you know, these are actual strangers coming up to you and going, oh, what's that? And just prodding you when it's not really their space to do that. So I think that's the key. It's the way you ask it, and just being able to ask a question or say a compliment in a nice way that, you know, isn't, it's not saying, oh, you know, you look a bit tired today, or you look a bit tired, or even just the word today on the end to me is like, well, how did you think I looked yesterday?
I don't think it's ever right to say, do you look tired today? I want to punch people in the face when you say that.
You have no idea what I've had to go through or, you know, whatever it is. So I think it's the way you frame those conversations, those phrases, because you are in control of that, and what you put out into the world is very important. But then when it comes to someone who is saying those compliments to you, you don't have control over what they say. So it's about, I don't know, you'd have more advice than me on this, and it's how you receive it, maybe not taking it too personal. What would you say?
I think it's whether you believe it or not. And if you are so strong in your self-worth and you know who you are, like if someone were, it's a hard one. Like if someone were to say to me, you are not a nice person, I would really struggle with that, because that's one of my MOs is to, no matter who you are, whether you're black, blue, brown, you know, alien, dog, whatever, it's just be nice. Now, I need to clarify, when I say be nice, that doesn't mean that I play dead, that I'm not assertive, but there's a big, big difference between a person who is assertive with what they believe and aggressive. So I just want to make that crystal clear, because you might have seen me on Channel 9 yesterday and you're like, well, you were not that nice. And that's where you have to say, well, was I not nice or was I just assertive? So just a bit of an asterisk there to that. So getting back to the compliment, if someone's, or even an insult, is ask yourself, is this affecting you because you actually, there's some truth in it, that you believe it? Or does this hurt because it's just hurtful? And a one little thing to consider is, can you just mentally say, ouch? Because, you know, when you stub your toe on the table, the first thing that you say is, ouch. So what about doing this with the same, you know, when you experience emotional pain, say, ouch, out loud if you want, if you're ballsy, if not, just internal.
Okay, so we've touched on some pretty heavy topics throughout this conversation, and I think it's been a really important conversation to share with the world. We've covered a lot of bases, from love to death to self-worth and accepting who you are and being able to control the controllables. Mm-hmm. But I think we're going to end on something a bit more lighthearted, and that is, the secret is, I love picking my nose.
I think we can all relate to this.
Surely everyone can just put their hand up and go, yeah.
I think so. And I think if we read between the lines here is basically what this person is saying. I love doing what makes me feel good. But there is a bit of shame in that. Here's my question. This is my shout out to people. I do not like blowing my nose in public, because here's the reason why. When you blow your nose, right? I mean, everyone does it the same way. Your snot is coming down your nasal passages. And if it gets caught on the very end, are you going to walk around with a booger in your nose? You have to slightly, at least minutely, pick your nose to get that end of the nose booger out. So my question to you is that okay to do in public? Or should you just walk around with a booger in your nose? I really don't know the answer to this, and I would really like some feedback.
Maybe drop a comment. Let us know what you think about this one.
Please, so question. I can sleep at night.
Yes. Well, how about this? And I know your answer to this, but I think the world needs to know, because it's pretty important. Would you tell someone that they have a booger on the end of... Yeah, there we go.
Yes, because I would want the same respect.
Yes.
Now, saying this, like, if I'm at Kohl's at the grocery store and then the checkout person has a booger in their nose, that's, I think, because it's such a passing transaction, I don't know if I would.
And this is coming back to the you know, how would you ask someone something like this? You know, a stranger coming up to me and going, oh, what's that on your arm? You know, a piece of technology that I have to wear to save my life. Not a nice way to come about and say that. You know, you wouldn't go up to someone and go, oh, you got a booger on the end of your nose, you know?
The last time this happened, I was actually in a very, very important business conversation and business meeting with a lovely woman. And about 5 minutes in, like, it was just, it was a monstrous bat in the cave. And I just, I felt so, I was in my mind, I was like, do I not? And I just, I guess I put myself in her situation and I just mentioned it to her. And she was so thankful. So, but I don't know if that's always going to be the case.
Yeah, that's it. But it's control the controllables yet again.
That's it. What an episode that has been. I just want to say thank you for listening. And if you do like this type of episode, we would love to hear whether you want more of them. And if so, we would love to hear if you would like to submit your own secret. Now, Gabby's going to put a little link. It's an anonymous form that you can submit your secret. And if we get enough of them, we'll do another one of these episodes. Before I say my final goodbye, thank you so much for listening. We would love your support to help this podcast grow. So if you would like to subscribe and share this podcast, gosh golly, it would just mean the world to us. So until next time, remember that every day is your time to shine.